Duo Show, right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I do this show every Monday and Friday. Well, co-host Jim Fetzer, with whom I do not always agree. Obligatory disclaimer, especially for Alex Jones. He comes on Tuesday through Thursday. Well, today we're going to be talking a little bit about some local controversies. But they do have national and global significance. Remember, all politics is said to be local. And often the most heated controversies, the most interesting ones, the ones that actually involve people that you know and see in real life sometimes, tend to be the ones in your own backyard. Well, I'm going to be talking about two of those kinds of controversies today. In the first hour, I'll be talking with Ken Van Doren, a Wisconsin libertarian activist who is working for a purist libertarian vision. And he has had some words with the Barrett campaign here in Wisconsin, where I'm running for Congress in the 3rd District. He disagrees with a couple of my positions that he thinks are not libertarian enough, and there's a whole contingent of libertarians that feel that way, although not enough to get more than 40% of the vote in the primary election. So we'll have a discussion of what libertarianism is all about, focusing but not exclusively dealing with what's going on right here in beautiful Wisconsin. Then, in the second hour of the show, we will bring on Mike Delaney of ProThink.org, who was assaulted at Fighting Bob Fest, Wisconsin's leading progressive political event, back on, what was it, the 6th or something of September, by a very obnoxious character who has been the bane of 9/11 truth in southern Wisconsin for years now. This character, his name is Alan Ruff, he went out and just sucker-punched Mike. Caught on video. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, that's all up at ProThink.org. He was mad at Mike because he thinks that Mike was displaying anti-Jewish bigotry in his approach to 9/11 truth. Many others have made that same claim, although they haven't tried to punch him out for it. We'll see what Mike has to say for himself, and we'll discuss this incident and whether it's okay for people to be running around punching out people that say things they don't like. All right, we'll be back in a moment. I think we may have Ken on the line already, so let's see if we can bring on Wisconsin libertarian activist Ken Van Doren. Ken, are you there?
Indeed, oh. I am. Yes,
hey,
I am.
All right, good to hear you.
Good to hear you too.
How are things in your neck of the Wisconsin woods?
Well, very warm. It's mid-80s here today. Just a very pleasant, beautiful fall day while we all live in Wisconsin, you know, for the 6 days that are just like this.
Exactly. Yeah, same where I am. I think that the whole state is basking in this fortunate occurrence. While the nation is going down the tubes, at least we get 6 days of beautiful weather here in Wisconsin.
Good spectator weather.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we're going to talk a little bit about what libertarianism is all about and our respective philosophies, which I think we probably agree on a lot of issues and disagree on a few. And, you know, maybe a good way to start out would be to say that when I jumped into the fray as a congressional candidate last spring, there developed a bit of opposition within the Libertarian Party. And maybe you could talk about how that developed and what issues in particular you think are really important for libertarians to get on the same page with.
Well, let me just, in a very few words, give an overview of libertarian philosophy. As a libertarian, I believe that I own myself. I own the product of my labor. I own my property, and we have people who want to assault all of that. You know, if I don't have the rights to life, liberty, property, basically I have no rights at all. It's all up to what the government wants to give back to me. So libertarians basically believe in individual sovereignty. We are the smallest individual unit of government, and we control what we own. Beyond that, you know, we have a framework of laws in this country that have some libertarian tendencies. Libertarians tend to believe in constitutional law because without the restrictions that the Constitution places on government, there's an awful lot of thou shalt nots in there, especially in the Bill of Rights. There's no limits whatsoever on government, and this is what we're seeing today. We're being bankrupted because we've gone beyond the Constitution, and our rights are under assault, and we're rapidly becoming a police state because people in this country, by and large, or at least the political establishment, has no respect for individual rights, no respect for the Constitution.
You're not going to get an argument from me on any of that, Ken.
Okay. Damn. Well, let me dig a little bit deeper here. Okay. I guess the few issues that you would disagree with the mainstream libertarians on, I believe, are your dedication to either a one-payer system or some sort of a publicly funded health care system.
That's the one that seems to get the most opposition from the from the local party.
I'm among those that would oppose you on that point. And the reason being, again, you know, I own what I earn. And if you're going to take it away from me for health care, well, why not for maybe elective health care, like plastic surgery or male enhancement or something like that? You know, where do you draw the line? Once you've given up your right to property, and that includes your paycheck, you know, once you've given that up, there's no legal or moral framework that would defend whatever is left.
Well, Ken, what do you think about infrastructure? For instance, should the government be involved in roads, bridges, dams, things like that?
Well, the thing is the government has gotten involved, and there are theoretical constructs where maybe they wouldn't have to. You know, the idea of toll roads. We have the infrastructure, and I guess in my lifetime I don't see, you know, government-provided infrastructure things going away. Might they be more efficiently provided in the private sector? I think probably.
You like driving on the toll roads in Illinois better than the freeways in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, Wisconsin has got one of the highest gas taxes in the nation, and by and large, over time, we have provided better roads. I think the other states have closed the gap significantly. Illinois has got a special case there, in that, you know, there's a considerable amount of corruption on both sides of the aisle down there that would tend toward inefficiencies. You know, I guess I like the fact that I can jump on a freeway, whether it's a toll road or not. You know, the one thing I do object to is I pay for the roads by way of my gasoline tax, and then I get on a toll road and I pay for another road again. So it'd be nice if I got a little credit back for what I've already paid, but...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I feel that way, too, when I'm down there in Illinois dodging the toll booth.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is that, you know, these are interesting arguments, but I think the fundamental argument that, there's other areas. You know, civil liberties are one that I'm real strong on, and the ability to run your business with absolute minimum of interference from the government. You know, I think if we can accomplish those in two lifetimes, I think we'll have gone a long way toward making this a much more libertarian society, and I think probably the last area where libertarianism is going to have any significant success.
Okay, well, I hope it does, because I'm pretty much in harmony with the philosophy, but I have certain disagreements about details, at least in the near term, for how we can make things work best. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Wisconsin libertarian Ken Van Doren. We shall return.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help, when I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.
Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett, and today I'm talking with Ken Van Doren, a Wisconsin libertarian activist, who is working with the other libertarian campaign in Wisconsin's 3rd District, the Ben Olson campaign, which I have a lot of respect for. Frankly, I wouldn't mind voting for Ben if he were still running. And I agree with most of Ken's ideas. We have a few disagreements as to how to apply libertarian philosophy in the real world. And so, yeah, Ken, one other area that I think where I think libertarians haven't quite come to terms with the reality of power in the contemporary situation is that there's always this idea that it's the government that is the bad guy and running things. And in a sense, that's true, but it depends what you mean by the government. At the local level, here in Wisconsin, we have a state government, we have local governments, and they do a lot of onerous things. I could tell you some stories, but I probably better not, about what's been going on in my life. But anyway, at the bigger level, it seems to me that what really happens is that power accumulates not so much in the actual official government, but in private hands of monopoly capitalists or monopoly bankers who become the de facto secret government. So
okay.
If you want to talk about, you know, scaling down the government, you should talk about scaling down the Bilderbergers, the Federal Reserve bankers, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and all of these groups, which actually are networks of private power, but which basically own what passes for a government.
Well, one of your commercials during the break was on, you know, the workings of the Federal Reserve, and that's one of the things I wanted to concentrate on talking about today. You know, the people you're talking about, you know, I guess if you and I mention it, you know, we're labeled as some kind of kook, and I don't care if there's a de facto conspiracy where people are working toward these ends to accumulate power, and it just is, or if there's this nebulous secret organization behind everything, which I think probably is less likely. But, you know, the fact is, you know, people seek power and money, which are interchangeable, and as Acton wrote, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. With the Federal Reserve, you have to understand that they are creating money out of thin air, and we are paying interest on it. Some of the debt that isn't sold, whatever's left over after the Chinese and the Arabs get done buying up what they want, is turned into FRNs, Federal Reserve notes, because the Federal Reserve, quote-unquote, buys that debt and creates the money to do it with. And as long as we have a corrupt money system, where people can use, they don't actually print it anymore, an electronic blip will do just as well as a piece of paper. But, you know, you and I can work 3 lifetimes, and we will not be able to create as much wealth as a banker can in a millisecond using the electronic blips. But the problem is, and this is what they're running into now, is that in order to maintain these reserve requirements, and those reserve requirements can be satisfied by previously written debt. I put in $1,000. They can loan out $900 against that. But that $900 also becomes another so-called deposit. They can loan $810 against that. Multiply it through $1,000 of our money earned equals $10,000 the banker can loan out. But if these debts go bad, then their reserve requirements fail and money actually disappears. And that's the source of the boom-bust economy right there. But in the meantime, you've got people who dipped into the till at Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and took hundreds of millions of dollars out of the economy with dollars that were created into existence. And, you know, the other thing is the debt creates false signals. You know, okay, sure, I get to borrow money to buy a house I really can't afford, and everything is going along as I'm making the payments. I catch a cold. I can't go to work for a day. I got to give the house back, and then the house of cards comes down. Well, that's a kind of a simplified version of what's going on. There's a lot of non-productive wealth, and the ability to manipulate the money, that's where the danger of this great power is. But if the only way I can obtain wealth is to produce goods and services that people will actually pay for, you know, that's the key to wealth. And if people, real wealth, not this artificial wealth that's disappearing before our eyes. And if, you know, if we have a what I would call a truly capitalist, not a, you know, a socialized capitalism that we have right now, where the too big to fail get failed out. As long as people respect that, you know, if you respect my property, I respect yours. I can't stick a gun in your back. I can't hire somebody else, and I can't hire a bureaucrat to do it for me or a politician. You know, the only way to wealth is either to ask somebody to donate to your cause or to produce a good or service that they're willing to part with their money for. And the more successful people are at finding out what consumers want, the wealthier they would be in that system. It wouldn't be the manipulated system that we have now.
Well, I agree completely. Webster Tarpley, who is the author of 9/11 Synthetic Terror, he's a pretty interesting commentator on world affairs. And he said recently, quote, when we look at institutions like J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, and Bank of America, we become aware that these large money center institutions have become detached from any conceivable connection to the world of production, wages, transportation, and all other useful and productive activities. These institutions are not commercial banks anymore in any meaningful sense of the term. And I think he put his finger on the problem, as you also just did, Ken, that our financial sector has gotten out of control. It's gone spinning off into its own world. It's not connected anymore to the world of production.
Right. And, you know, the results, you know, I don't know if the people are evil, but the results certainly have been. You know, we're facing this economic crunch right now, specifically because this counterfeit money is been invested in investments that have to be liquidated. They can pour all the money in the world they want to, but, you know, the sad fact is we're going to face a contraction period here. It's like Ron Paul, presidential candidate, said, you know, when you live beyond your means, sooner or later, you must live beneath your means. We're in the beneath your means. We're going to pay for our sins. And unfortunately, the bankers who created this problem, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately. I have no sympathy for them. I don't think any amount of suffering on the part of folks who bled the system for hundreds of millions and billions of dollars deserve much sympathy.
Well, you know, Ron Paul
We got to get a handle on this. Go ahead.
Yeah. Ron Paul nailed it back in that article he wrote. It was published in the August edition of the Liberty Voice newspaper out of Ohio. It's a good, great libertarian-oriented paper run by Sherry Clark. And Ron Paul in that article headlined, "Something Big is Going to Happen." You know, pretty much said exactly what was going to be coming just, you know, a month or so after that was published. This crisis that we're in right now, a lot of us have seen it coming. I guess I did, too, and I'm sure you probably did, too, Ken. And they're trying to use this crisis to steal even more money. We've got to stop them.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Let me tell you. One for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Welcome back.
To 5%.
Good show. You're listening to GCNlive.com. We're not the tax man here. We're the anti-tax man. I guess Ken Van Toren, Wisconsin libertarian, says that the billionaire bankers are swindling us. I completely agree. Ken, do you think that this financial crisis has been engineered so they can grab even more government power with this so-called bailout bill that would give, Paulson the dictatorial powers over the financial sector? Do you think this whole thing is planned as a swindle?
Well, you know, some people would discredit this, you know, so-called conspiracy theory as you're laying it out there. Now, I look at the facts, and what is going on now is completely in concert with what the Austrian School of Economics, which is what Ron Paul follows, would predict. You know, if you inflate the currency, you create bubbles. Every boom is followed by a bust. So it fits the formula. It fits the program. Was it engineered? Whether it was engineered or not, let me tell you this. It's just, you know, just like whether 9/11 was engineered or not, there were people there who were waiting for an event like this to happen and took full advantage of it to use it as an excuse to take our liberties away. And likewise, whether this event was engineered or not, there are people there who want to use it to their advantage. We're bailing out the richest people in this country, number one. They should bear full responsibility for the fraud that they've perpetrated, and I guess the FBI is even prosecuting some, or looking into prosecuting some people criminally for stretching the truth a little bit. But you take a look at Mr. Paulson. What is he? The former CEO of Goldman Sachs? 2 years ago, from the janitor to the CEO, Goldman Sachs paid its employees $640,000 straight through. And you can bet that Mr. Paulson got more than his fair share of that.
Hey, that was the average
point salary. Is, that was the average salary of Goldman Sachs. An investment, the description is an investment banking firm specializing in leveraged buyouts. So you got two things. Banker, that means creation of currency out of nothing, and leverage, that's the use of credit. So they're manufacturing credit out of nothing to line their pockets, stealing the productive effort. You know, a lot of times they attack a weak firm, and whatever weakness they have, at least they put some blood, sweat, and tears into making a product. And then along comes Goldman Sachs, creates the money out of nothing, and deprives them of whatever little that they have left. Like I said, you know, what's frightening is you have the government and the Federal Reserve taking over almost the entire financial sector, maybe everything but these little local banks. But virtually the entire financial sector is being overtaken by the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department. It's the greatest and most rapid socialization of any industry any time in the history of the world that I can figure. I mean, even Lenin took a few years to consolidate his power after the Bolsheviks took over Russia. Here we have our own Bolsheviks taking over the financial sector, wham, in the snap of a finger. And taxpayers pay for it for years to come. Our children and our grandchildren will be paying for what they're about to do in Washington, D.C. today. And I hope everybody listening to this program is just as mad about it as I am. And I know that you are equally angry about this, too.
Well, I'm completely outraged. I tend to agree with a columnist, her name, Larissa Alexandrovna of the Huffington Post, who called this billionaire banker's bailout bill, quote, the final stages of the coup, which will implement full-fledged fascism on the heels of this manufactured financial crisis. And she says if this bill passes, the only alternative will be revolution. Now, I'm not quite ready to start locking and loading just yet, but I'm starting to, you know, entertain those kind of thoughts because, you know, the people of this country have been abused so excessively over the past years and even decades. That at some point we really need to stand up for our rights somehow.
Yes, and you know, we have the golden opportunity. One thing I'm encouraged by, this bailout is coming right virtually on the eve of the election, so the electorate won't have a great opportunity to forget. You know, I've jokingly in the past said that April 15th ought to be election day.
Yeah,
but, you know, they're going to, you know, they're going to pull the trigger on this, and I suspect it's going to pass. They're going to pull the trigger on this, and in 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to be going to the polls. And if we, the electorate, do not make them pay, woe is us. You know, woe is this country. Woe is the future of our children and our grandchildren, because we will basically have given up. You know, one thing I want to interject here, there were 11 primary races in the state of Wisconsin for state and federal office. Every single incumbent beat out their primary opponent. I don't think that bodes well for any kind of change.
Well, it's a real paradox. I've been talking about this with the folks from firecongress.org, otherwise known as the Kick Them All Out Project on the web at kickthemalloutcom, as well as firecongress.org.
Sounds like my Reno project. I'll tell you about that.
Great minds think alike. But you know, the point here is that the polls have shown that the popularity ratings for Congress have gone through the floor. They're down in single digits. They're about one-third of the abysmal popularity ratings for Bush, which are as low as presidents ever get. Well, Congress is single digits, and yet more than 90% of the time, the incumbent just keeps getting elected. There's a huge disconnect here. What do you think explains this?
Well, you know, here's a little saying that I've made up. Remember, when your congressman brings home the bacon, somebody's pig has to die. Pig you save may be your own. People have this disconnect. They like all those goodies, those freebies, but they're not free. Every time you get something from government, you're either giving up your pocketbook or your liberty or both. And, you know, we got to, as an electorate, we have to be a little more mindful of that. And, you know, I came to the conclusion a long time ago, I will do without some creature comforts so long as I have my liberty. If I have my liberty, I still can go out and earn an income, create a business, you know, create some wealth. But without my liberty, I have nothing. All I have is the dregs that the government decides to give to me.
That's right. That's why I am a philosophical libertarian, because, well, not just because I think it works well as a universal principle, which I do, but also because in terms of the actual history of this country, our nation, the USA, is founded on the principle of liberty. We don't have other traditions of languages and culture that goes, you know, goes back for centuries like most other countries have. We have a country that was kind of invented by a bunch of people who sat down and came up with these principles out of the Enlightenment of liberty. So it's the core of our national identity. And it worked pretty well. If we can keep it going, that would be a nice thing to do for our descendants.
Well, you know, some people got fat, they got comfortable, and thought that something for nothing was to be had. They forget about, you know, how the wealth was created, you know, through individual effort and investment, you know, savings and investment. Well now, our financial system, I won't talk about that anymore, is in ruins because we got away from that. And, you know, we went in the directions of Keynes. We went in the direction of the Fabian socialists of Europe that pretty well destroyed England. You know, we're going to have to get back to our founding principles, you know, of individual liberty and individual initiative if we're going to be prosperous as a nation.
Well, do you think that part of the problem is this quest for empire? Because when I look at the U.S. government and, you know, look at other governments, I see that we're spending more money on the military than all of the other significant military powers on Earth combined.
Combined.
Yet we have Canada on one side, Mexico on the other. Who are we defending ourselves against? There's something wrong here. And I think that part of the problem is that these financiers are trying to take over the world, impose world government, using the U.S. military to do it. And we have to say no to that. We'll be back to hear what Ken thinks.
Absolutely. I'll concur.
All right. We'll be back in a second with more talk. So stick around here at GCNLive.com.
If your body isn't feeling too well these days, you're gonna start taking this hemp, I say. Go to hempusa.org. You may not like what I'm about to say, but you know I'm gonna say it anyway. The government doesn't want the best for you. They keep you down, they keep you blue. They starve your body for all its nutrients. They won't let you grow industrial hemp. It really doesn't make any kind of sense when it's so healthy for the world and useful for you, my friends. I hope Mr. Bush will hear this song, for the heart of America wants this one. Go to hempusa.org. If you're a truther, an anarchist, or renegade, you only want things that God has made. Go to hempusa.org. We offer free shipping anywhere in the States. Go to hempusa.org.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Turning into kind of a USSA over here. We're working on it. We're trying to stop it. I'm Kevin Barrett, and today I'm talking with Ken Van Doren, Wisconsin libertarian activist who was the campaign advisor to Ben Olson, my libertarian primary opponent. We had a historic first libertarian congressional primary here in Wisconsin. It was a really good good time, and we got a bunch of media coverage for libertarian ideas. I think it was a wonderful thing to have that, and people need to run for office more often and raise these kinds of issues, because if we don't, we're going to lose our country. And Ken, I was talking just before the break about the military side of all of this. We have a bloated military budget, and this $5 trillion Iraq boondoggle, that's what Stiglitz, the Nobel laureate economist, says it's going to cost us, has completely trashed our economy. This is the key reason for the economic crunch we're in right now. And now the Army Times just reported that the 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team will be used beginning October 1st to quell dissent in the USA. They say it's an on-call federal response force for natural or man-made emergencies and disasters, including terrorist attacks. And this is the first time that combat troops will be assigned to NORTHCOM, which is the homeland defense sector, quote-unquote. This totally shreds posse comitatus, and it initiates full-fledged martial law in the USA. Well, what should we do about this?
All I can say, right now, I'm not here to call for a revolution except for one between the ears. We need to change the thinking of this country, and we need to change the direction we're going, and the quickest way to do that is to turn just about every incumbent out of office, with maybe a handful of exceptions in the whole country. They're selling us down the river. Now, let me make a couple other points here. Now, you talked about, the military overseas and the high cost of medicine and market failures. And if you get right down to it, every single one of those problems is tied to two things. Number one, a neglect of our Constitution. And number two, this artificial money system. See, if you read what the Project for a New American Century wants, they want perpetual war for perpetual peace. And they use almost exactly that term there. They think that we can go into a country, bulldoze them over with a bunch of military might, and get them to trade with us. Well, maybe for a while, but you surely create a whole lot of resentments. And without the funny money, without the money that's going to enslave your children and my grandchildren, all of this would be greatly curtailed, because future generations are going to pay for the sins of us today, just like our taxpayers, one way or another, are going to pay. Whether they pay because the economy's in the dumpster now, or whether they pay a whole bunch of taxes, and then the economy's in the dumpster anyway. The future short-term is not very good.
But well, every child born today is born with about, $35,000 worth of the national debt hanging over its head?
Yeah. It's worse than what they say, because, the real debt is not the $10 trillion that is announced. We're going to add $1 trillion to that in 1 week here. Boom. There's 300 and some million off budget billion in military expenditures, and then the $700 billion bailout, which I predict is going to be way more expensive than that if we've allowed them to do it this way. Short term, we need to get out of the way, let the market adjust to whatever realities there are. Long term, we cannot allow them to tax us to subsidize the failures of this financial system. But the financial system is behind virtually every problem.
Well, what's the solution, Ken? Do you think we need to go back to honest currency backed by gold, as so many people say?
Absolutely. As a stopgap, we can. Ron Paul introduced a bill saying we should have competition among currencies. You don't like gold? Well, you can keep your Federal Reserve notes. And if you would rather trade in gold, you can take it exclusively. But if we have different currencies backed by different things, FRNs, of course, are backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government.
Uh-huh.
For some reason, that doesn't seem to be worth as much as it used to be.
Yeah.
I guess I'm gonna take gold. I'm sorry, I'm gonna take gold.
Yeah, I think most people would, and of course, that's the reason that they outlawed private gold back in the 30s. And
they don't want you to escape the dragnet. Now, the other thing, I don't know if your viewers are aware of this, but Liberty Gold, we used to be in the business of selling bullion. They had their records and their physical inventory confiscated from them, and they owe people throughout the country gold bullion. Can't call them coins because that denotes currency, but they're gold bullion, and they were very careful to do all of this, I don't think they've even filed charges, but the U.S. Treasury now has possession of all that gold their computers, their records, their customer list, put them out of business.
Now, were those people who were doing
don't think the
Paul
police
dollars?
Need is, what?
Were they doing the Ron Paul silver dollars or something? Or was that those people?
I can't remember. But, you know, you can look up Liberty Gold. I think they still have their website active. They might be the ones that did that. But there's a lot of private mints in the country that they could do that. I haven't kept up on
that. Well, you know, we're doing that right here on this very network. GCNLive.com is kind of connected to, I believe it's Midas Resources. You hear the ads.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we're in the thick of the battle for honest currency right here on Patriot Radio.
But, you know, the secret to wealth, to peace, to freedom, you know, and these were the cores of Ron Paul's campaign, are to have honest money. If we don't have honest money, we can't have honest commerce. Well, you know, we'll again be in the hands of the manipulators, and you know, we'll be fighting unconstitutional wars. And again, our children are going to live as paupers if we don't get a hold of this and get a hold of it now. You know, I got involved in the freedom movement because, you know, all the crap that had been stuffed into my head in 17 years of schooling, it just became obvious to me that that's not really the way the world works. And I've been part of what Ron Paul calls the freedom movement ever since, almost 30 years. And it was in another downturn, a lot less severe than this one's going to be, that I saw the light on that. But, you know, central, you know, two things, you know, the Constitution, because it places the limits on the government. We don't place limits on the government. We have a lawless government, and that's where we're headed. It's happening by the day. We're seeing more and more abuse of power by various levels of government. And we're being bankrupted. We're being bankrupted by a dishonest money system, and the two are working hand in hand to enslave us.
Well, that's right. And, you know, you've been working on these issues longer than I have. I was aware of some of them, but not all by any means. It's only in the past 2 years post 9/11 when I figured out what happened there that I started, you know, peeling back the curtain and looking at the man behind the curtain in these other areas.
Well, there's some very evil people, you know, call it a conspiracy or not, but there's some very evil people behind this thing. You know, the money manipulation and everything, it all ties together.
I agree. I wrote an essay called Twilight of the Psychopaths, suggesting that psychopaths who have no compunction about lying and killing have an advantage in climbing certain kinds of hierarchies, especially government hierarchies, military and intelligence hierarchies, because these guys can kill and they can lie like they breathe.
And yeah, well, you know, Bill Clinton could tell a lie with greater moral authority than most of us can tell the truth.
That's right. He was a better liar than Bush, that's for sure.
You know, and I'm not here to defend Republicans by any means. You know, I never thought it possible that in this country we could have a worse president than Bill Clinton, and along comes GB2, George Bush II. You know, it's a terrible state of affairs. Oh, I know what I was going to say. 30 years ago I said we have one generation to solve this. Guess what? We're at the end of that. We might only have months or even weeks, but surely we have less than 5 years to get on top of this, to turn the public around and get them on our side, or the war is over. That's my estimation.
Yeah, we've got to get the word out. We've got to try to send a signal in this election that people are waking up and changing direction.
One thing I think that would send a great signal would be if we voted for third-party candidates. And, you know, I'm not quite as enamored with everybody who's left as I was with Ron Paul, but you know, I think a close second is Chuck Baldwin, and that's who I'm voting for. But we can't vote for McBama O'Kane. You know, that's just more of the same, more debt, more lies, more...
Yeah, they're both on board with the billionaire banker bailout bill, it looks like.
Yeah. Do we have some time left, or is that it?
Yeah, that's it. We're at the end of the hour.
Give a plug for Campaign for Liberty. Can you do that next, Kevin?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, plug it.
Oh, okay, Campaign for Liberty. If you really care about the battle, campaignforliberty.com. Join today. 100,000 people already have.
All right, campaignforliberty.com. Keep up the great work, Ken. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. That was Ken Van Doren, campaignforliberty.com, Wisconsin libertarian activist. We'll be back with more Wisconsin controversies, this time far more controversial, in just a moment. So stick around. Controversy Day on the Dynamic Duo Show right here at GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on here every Monday and Friday, and today we're talking about controversies in Wisconsin. During the first hour, I brought on the campaign advisor of my libertarian opponent in the Wisconsin 3rd District Congressional Primary, Ken Van Doren. And we really hashed it out there. As you could see, we disagreed on just about nothing. But anyway, he was involved in getting another candidate to run against me just because there were a couple of issues that he didn't agree with me on. And so we had a little bit of controversy there anyway. But more importantly, we're working together to find solutions. In this hour, I'll be bringing on another extremely controversial Wisconsin political personality, Mike Delaney. He's the maker of the film Missing Links, which is a 9/11 truth documentary focusing on evidence of Israeli and Zionist involvement in the 9/11 attacks. The title Missing Links seems to suggest that this information is missing from much of the 9/11 truth movement, and frankly, I think that Mike may have a point there. Many people have shied away from this evidence, perhaps for fear of being insulted as anti-Semites, which of course happens whenever people criticize Israel or its American supporters. On the other hand, Mike has been criticized, and I think justly, for some of the language that he uses and for his intemperate attacks on 9/11 truth movement leaders, including, I believe, even myself at one point. So we don't agree on some things, but we do agree on others. And I'll tell you, one thing I agree with Mike about is that he shouldn't have gotten punched out in a public place just for distributing his political information and speaking his mind. And that's exactly what happened at BobFest, the leading Wisconsin sort of progressive political event back in early September. Mike was out there doing his activism, and along came a fellow named Alan Ruff. Alan Ruff is the leading enemy of the 9/11 truth movement in Wisconsin. He has done everything he can to slander 9/11 truth leaders. He tries to convince people not to buy David Griffin books in the bookstore he works at, Rainbow Bookstore in Madison, which, other than his presence, is a pretty good bookstore. In short, he is an extremely obnoxious character. He's a bully. He has physically assaulted at least two Madison activists who are perhaps going to be testifying if this thing ever gets to trial when for Alan's assault on Mike Delaney. So I agree with Mike that this is really a scandal to have somebody come up and punch you in the face, just a sucker punch, simply for speaking your mind politically. And for that, you know, I salute Mike for his courage in getting out there and putting out information that draws this kind of an attack from such a bully as Alan Ruff. So, hey, Mike Delaney, welcome to the show. How's it going?
It's pretty good. Thank you for having me on today, Kevin.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you on. You know, I met you a few years ago. There were some 9/11 Truth Movement gatherings in Milwaukee, and, you know, things always, you know, seemed to go along fine. And then, like just last year, you seemed to start really getting intense on this focus on Zionism and 9/11, and saying that people who weren't focusing on that as much as you were bad guys, and you were even calling me a bad guy for a while. Do you still think I'm a bad guy?
No, I kind of laid off everybody, including some of the biggest people out there that you know, I used to call out a lot. You know, I really just got tired of complaining about everybody obfuscating truth, or, you know, basically not telling the whole story, and that's where Missing Links was born out of. You know, I just took action upon it to make sure I at least put out a piece of you know, a piece of history myself here. So,
well, you know, and I think that, you know, maybe we could sort of start out the show with stuff that we agree on and then move on to the areas of disagreement later. And I'll have to say I do agree with you to some extent that, well, I completely agree with you that evidence of Israeli and Zionist involvement in 9/11 does exist and has been downplayed throughout much, if not most, of the 9/11 truth movement. That, I think, is a pretty solid argument. But what led you to first, you know, discover this evidence and to think it was this important?
Well, I mean, let's be completely clear here. This evidence was out just within not even a couple of months of the events of 9/11. So it wasn't a question that the evidence wasn't predominantly out there and provable. It was just the fact that you know, the majority of this 9/11 truth movement was refusing to put the pieces on the table for the audience to hear about. And it was about 2006, about a year or two into my own investigation in 9/11. That I started seeing a lot of these very
huge smoking guns that I thought at the time were very important to be talking about. And, you know, it just went on from there, and I just dug a little deeper and started finding just so many connections. And then I started questioning how come other people aren't talking about this. And, you know, that's basically where I'm at today.
Well, that's interesting because I actually followed a kind of opposite trajectory, or at least a slightly a different learning curve, because shortly after 9/11, I actually was aware of some of the evidence implicating Israel and Zionists. I read Justin Raimondo's book, which came out in 2002. It's called The Terror Enigma. Justin Raimondo is the main guy over at antiwar.com. He's a leading libertarian thinker. And he was calling attention to this evidence from the get-go, practically. And, you know, not a whole lot of people were paying attention to him. Ironically, one who was Alexander Coburn, who has since become a dedicated enemy of the 9/11 truth movement. But anyway, I noticed all this stuff when it was happening. And frankly, Mike, to tell you the truth, during the first 2 years after 9/11, I kind of suspected Israeli involvement. The evidence wasn't clear enough for me to be 100% sure, and it was then 2 years after 9/11, that was when I discovered the research of David Griffin, which was pointing in a somewhat different direction towards stand-down orders given to the U.S. military, towards Bush being kept in a known location during these supposed surprise attacks in Florida, things that implicated the top of the U.S. chain of command. And so I then shifted and focused more on the top of the U.S. chain of command as being ultimately responsible for this, and thinking of the Israeli Mossad involvement as presumably just sort of one of the many contractors that were involved. Perhaps they contracted out part of the job to them, just as they contracted out setting up the Saudi patsies to Saudi intelligence and perhaps Pakistani intelligence and so on. So that was the trajectory I kind of followed. But now I tend to agree with you that the downplaying of the Israeli Zionist connection does bother me. It seems that there's a kind of a taboo on it in certain quarters in the 9/11 truth movement, and I don't believe in any kind of taboos. I believe in absolute freedom of speech, and so I have no problem with you pursuing that line of inquiry. In fact, I encourage you to continue.
Yeah, well, one of the things we addressed in the beginning of Chapter 3 when we started the extensive we started to show the extensive evidence showing who was involved in 9/11, because this movie is not about the science. There's enough movies out there that have played around with the science, and we certainly do advocate that it was a controlled demolition. But we wanted to deal with who, and, you know, one of the things that we say in the beginning of Chapter 3 is we don't necessarily consider it a Zionist or an Israeli thing, but a Jewish criminal network, and I know a lot of people have.
I'm already getting into the parts of places where I disagree with you, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess we can get into that in a minute. But yeah, I mean, the whole pretense of the movie was to identify who was behind it. And, you know, certainly, like you said, the evidence has been out for quite a long time. I mean, look at people like Christopher Bolin. You know, there's another guy out there that's had excellent information, Dick Eastman, and several others that have talked upon this issue, so.
Right, and those people, of course, are drummed out of polite society, but part of the reason is that they say things that make it sound like they're prejudiced against Jewish people, and that, of course, is the most unacceptable prejudice out there. Personally, I think that all prejudices maybe should be a little more equal. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Mike Delaney of ProThink.org. Stick around.
Is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Kevin Barrett, paperback writer of the book Truth Jihad, My Epic Struggle Against the 9/11 Big Lie. Today I'm talking with Mike Delaney, who is a video maker. He did Missing Links, a very extensive look at evidence implicating Zionists, supporters of Israel, and Mike says, and I don't agree with this, Jews as possible perpetrators of 9/11. Before the break, I was saying that I think that all prejudices should be on a more level playing field. And just to give you an example, you know, Mike, your DVD, of course, is very controversial. Even in the 9/11 truth movement, a lot of people find it's they don't like it because they think it's got some anti-Jewish prejudice. But let's take a look at this DVD called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West, which is being delivered to literally tens of millions of households in swing states like Ohio, Michigan, Florida, Colorado, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Missouri. This is apparently an attempt to brainwash people into hating Muslims. Can you imagine a DVD called Obsession, the Radical Jews War Against the West? Can you imagine such a DVD being delivered to tens of millions of households in this country? It just wouldn't happen. There's such a disconnect here because, you know, normally prejudice is something that you have to watch out for when it's against a powerless group, right? Like prejudice against African Americans whose incomes on the average are, you know, a little over half of white people. So, you know, but with this prejudice against Jews, you know, Jews are the most powerful ethnic group in the country per capita by a mile. The average Jewish income is roughly double that of the average non-Jewish income. Roughly half of the 100 richest Americans are Jewish, and virtually all of them are hardcore pro-Zionists working together to influence U.S. Middle East policy. And yet, the slightest hint of any kind of prejudice against Jews leads to a huge uproar and a fury and a scandal, and whoever does it is libeled and reviled and exiled from polite society, while this outrageous prejudice against Muslims is being broadcast everywhere. I mean, even the New York Times is extremely Islamophobic, and they're one of the better papers out there. You got this horrendous DVD, this bigoted DVD going to tens of millions of households. So it does seem to me that we have a kind of a disconnect here in the way that different types of prejudices against different groups are being tolerated or not tolerated in our society. That
yeah,
that, you, Mike?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You hit a lot of it on the head there. And I would also, before we get any further with taking credit for the movie entirely, I'd also like to mention that the gentleman that helped me with the movie, he did a huge amount of work on this movie with me, and the guy's name is John Martinson. Just to clarify that, you know, I'm not a white supremacist or anything like that, and I believe that, you know, I'm a better non-Jew than any other non-Jews out there. The John Martinson himself is of mixed race. He's half black and half white, and he's also in the video where I'm getting my jaw jacked up by Mr. Alan Ruff. So I would like to give him credit for helping a lot in that movie, and he does an excellent amount of work with videos. He's also done several other movies too that are noteworthy.
Okay, well, yeah, let's make that clear then. So, Mike, you're not somebody who thinks that any particular race is better than other, any other particular race or any race is worse.
Well, I think this is I've come in my research, and I'm sure that you know, a lot of people won't agree with me, and that's fine. I'm very comfortable. If people want to label me bigot or racist or anti-Semite, that's fine. Labels really just kind of bounce off me. But the thing that I've been finding, this is kind of a Jew versus non-Jew thing, and the thing you get with this is Jewish supremacism, I should say. Let me say that, where you have a group of people that believe they're better than everybody else no matter what race they are. That's kind of where I'm at with this. So, yeah, I certainly don't hold any prejudice. I don't walk around, you know, calling, you know, blacks or Latins anything other than their heritage, and I don't have any prejudice against them at all. It's just the banking system, the media, the attacks on 9/11, the terrorism, the abortions. You know, 90% of abortion doctors happen to be Jewish when they're 2% of the population.
Are you sure of that? Do you have sources for that?
Yeah, I do have sources for that. I actually have an article with the sources for that on my website somewhere. I can definitely bring that back up to the top for people that are interested in seeing that. A lot of the key feminist leaders in the country. Now, that, you know, this is, I could get into so many topics that deal with this group of people. It's better illustrated in one of the movies John made was Secret Covenant of Your Owners, which is actually the top of my website right now. I highly advise people to go take a look at that. It doesn't have anything to do with 9/11.
Do you think, though, that this, I mean, basically what you just gave us was a really broad laundry list of things. And, you know, I would question whether you're painting with a very, very broad brush here, linking, you know, doctors. It's, you know, I am aware that Jewish people are more represented in the medical profession than non-Jewish people. There's that whole cultural thing of, you know, my son, the doctor, right? So naturally, there would be more abortion doctors, too, I would guess. But you know, the thing is that linking that to 9/11, I mean, that's a pretty huge leap. And that kind of, you know, painting with such a broad brush over a whole group of people, many of whom I know personally to be very, very good people, and very, very different from each other, completely different. So whenever you paint with that broad of a brush about a whole group, it really sounds like a kind of prejudice where, you know, if somebody comes up and they turn out to be from that group, you're going to have a prejudged negative attitude towards them. And I think it's best to try to avoid that and to criticize, you know, critique ourselves when we find ourselves having that kind of prejudice.
I agree with you. I will say I agree to disagree at this point. I mean, this is kind of where the evidence has led me, and I've made an overwhelming amount of documentation to support a lot of these facts. Now, let it be noted, too, though, that I have two websites that I've built separate from ProThink.org that are dedicated to two Jewish individuals, and that's what, you know, JackBernstein.org and BenjaminFriedman.net. So, you know, for somebody to say that I'm certainly writing off all Jews out there would be absurd, because I certainly wouldn't have created and built.
But you don't necessarily have to go to people like that who were kind of, you know, at one extreme of thought on these issues to find all sorts of examples of good sides to Jewish culture, such as a strong family life, a strong emphasis on education, which is what has produced this social success, which has led to all of this power. You know, for every bad side that any particular ethnic group or whatever kind of group that you can find has, quite often you're going to find that the bad side is just sort of the reflection of the good side. And, I mean, wouldn't you admit that there's, you know, that's something you should take into consideration?
Well, no, because, well, I mean, obviously take that into consideration, but if you look at the whole picture, it's disproportionate with this community versus other communities.
Well, disproportionate success leads to disproportionate power, and if that's based on reverence for education and family, there's, you know, it's not necessarily a terrible thing. We'll be back in a moment. Kevin Barrett with Mike Delaney here on the Dynamic Duo Show.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Speech Radio, right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett, bringing you interesting and exciting guests on a regular basis. And today's guest is Mike Delaney. Mike was recently assaulted for practicing his free speech rights. You can actually watch him getting sucker punched if you go to his website, prothink.org. And even though I don't really agree with Mike's opinions and would very strongly try to, you know, urge him to rethink some of them, I think he has a right to free speech just like everybody else, and if a big anti 9/11 truth bully like Alan Ruff is going to sucker punch him for trying to speak his mind in public, I'm going to bring Mike on the air and let him speak his mind on my radio show, regardless of what I disagree or agree with him on. And, well, Mike, we were talking before the break, and we've already gotten into the areas of disagreement quite prematurely, but hey, whatever. As far as the whole, you know, Jewish cultural thing goes, honestly, I really think, having experienced quite a bit of this in my time in the university, and, you know, I've learned a fair bit about American Jewish culture, at least. And for all of what you could point at as things that would sound bad, I could point at something that sounds good. It's all going to balance out. You know, just like with colonized people in places like Israel, you know, they hate the Palestinian Arabs, and they have all these prejudices against Arabs. And many of these prejudices are about issues that could be good qualities, but they just always get turned upside down. For example, Arabs are very, very generous people. You could go to a village and they might try to give you a gift that's worth three times their annual salary, and try to insist that you take it. There's a real extreme generosity there. And some of the Israelis will tell you, oh, these people are crazy. They don't know the value of money, right? So here's a trait that could be seen positively as generosity or negatively as craziness and lack of knowing the value of money. And they just pick the negative one. And I really think you're doing that a little bit with Jewish culture. But when we get back to the 9/11 issue and the Zionism issue and the power issue there, I really think it helps to try to narrow our focus a little bit and point out that 9/11 was not done by the Jews. It was done by a very small number of people, of various types of people, some probably Jewish, some probably not. And to the extent that there was this connection that has anything to do with Jewish identity, it was probably because a few of the perpetrators, or perhaps many of the perpetrators, I don't know, were these radical Zionist neocons. And that they don't represent the American Jewish community, Mike. Actually, the American Jewish community is more anti-Iraq war and more anti-neocon than any other major American ethnic group. So this is a really important nuance I think we need to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that you'll find groups of Jews who are against other groups of Jews. When it comes down to it, the supremacy of it that's the glue that holds them together. You're not going to find too many people like Benjamin Friedman out there.
Well, yeah, but Benjamin Friedman is he's kind of off at one extreme. But I can give you other examples. For example, Steve Alton, the author of The Shell Game, is Jewish, and he is far from a Jewish supremacist. He's just a guy. He's an ordinary guy, an ordinary Jewish American like the dozens of others, maybe hundred plus that I've known in my life. There's no real Jewish supremacism there. Once in a while, it might come up a little bit if you poke around and so on. There's, you know, just like any other ethnic group has its own, you know, black power and so on and so forth. But it's, I don't think you have to, you know, go all the way to Benjamin Friedman to find people in American Jewish culture who are not Jewish supremacists. I think that the Jewish supremacists are a pretty small portion, you know, the hardcore ones. And the hardcore Zionists like Kudnik 9/11 perps are a tiny, tiny minority of the Jewish population. Focus on those criminals, not on, you know, tarring the whole population with a broad brush.
Well, no, that's what Missing Links, identifies names and faces and, puts the links together that other films have not done. I'll basically leave it at that. Is what's identified in the movie is what, take it or leave it. I certainly understand the sentiment of getting into a topic like that. Like I said, I've been called every name in the book for my thoughts, but when the evidence comes down to it, I guess I wouldn't call Benjamin Friedman extreme. I would just call him the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And there certainly isn't nothing wrong with extreme truthing.
Well, yeah, and he's focusing on this particular group of elite bankers. Isn't that right? I mean, he's not trying to talk about the whole world Jewish community.
Well, I'd like to, one of the things I do point out about Benjamin Friedman, and also a lot of people don't like this guy, but he was a very intelligent individual, Bobby Fischer, is that they both denounced being Jews themselves completely. They didn't just denounce the Zionist aspect of it. They denounced the ideology and the twin pillars of race and religion altogether. Benjamin Friedman converted to Christianity, which is his choice, and I certainly wouldn't sit here be advocating that that's what people need to do, but it is notable that that is what his actions and words were. The first thing in the audio file of his speech back in 1961 is he was declared as a former Jew, not a former Zionist. So there's something to be said about, very intelligent individuals that came out of that community to say this and risk their reputations, careers, and everything else they had going for them, because both of these individuals were affluent in some aspect or another, and they did, they did damage or took a huge risk to come out and say what they did.
Well, Mike, though, yeah, I think by focusing on sort of people who defected, as you could say, from this community, you are looking at a kind of a couple of fairly extreme cases. And people do this with Muslims, too. I'm a Muslim, and there are these people who say, oh, all Muslims should convert to Christianity. Ann Coulter said, kill their leaders and convert them all to Christianity. And there is this huge anti-Muslim pressure out there in the culture post 9/11. And what they do is they take these ex-Muslims like Irshad Manji,
and Walid Shabbat.
yeah, these people who hate Islam, and then they basically left being real Muslims, and those people get held up by our media as the heroic good Muslims, and all of the real Muslims are the bad Muslims. And it sounds like you're kind of doing the same thing with these people who left the Jewish community and holding them up as the good guys, when there are plenty of good guys who stayed within the Jewish community.
Well, I guess this is what I would ask for the plenty of good guys in the community is to come out and help fight, against the supremacy of it and their counterparts that are giving them a bad name through the banking system, the media, their fake controlling dissent rights movements, their terrorism around the world that, you know, obviously Israel being a home base and Zionism being a political party, but a lot of these issues, including usury, which is both against Christianity and Islam, have been going on for a long time within this community. And I can totally understand not throwing every one of them in the same pail together, or whatever you want to call it, the same box. But, you know, I would advocate for people from the Jewish communities who understand where this research, which is a truthful and been well documented for quite a long time, to speak out against this, because, you know, there's a point in time if people are going to see this and start ignorantly putting things together, and they're not going to understand the thing. Maybe, you know, I sometimes wonder if that's maybe why the Truth Movement or something, they don't address this issue, because it is such a difficult issue to understand, which isn't really what I get as far as phone calls. People that do come to my site and say, you know, this is the biggest piece of the issue, and I've been missing, I couldn't make sense of all the other stuff that was going on, but once I got this big piece of the puzzle, a lot of things made sense. But, you know, I would ask that from the community, you know, from the Jewish community, the people that are aware of these things going on, that see that their brethren are running all the banking systems that are crashing economies, to see that 9/11 was dominated by these people, obviously not every single one, and obviously the whole crime wasn't all Jews. You know, I certainly don't make that accusation in a movie, because that would just be absolutely ignorant. But, you know, it is predominantly and overrepresented by the Jewish community. And so that's what I would ask people that,
I kind of think you overstate the case there, Mike, but I just think there's some truth in some of this. For instance, the New York Jewish community knows very well that Larry Silverstein is big time in that, he's said to be big time in that mafia there. And here's a guy who walked off with billions of dollars in profits on the destruction of the World Trade Center, and nobody will investigate him. New York Times won't go there. So there's a problem there. We'll be back in a moment. Kevin Barrett.
Living is easy. Nothing is real, nothing to get home about. Strawberry fields forever.
Welcome back. This is the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett, and right now I'm talking with Mike Delaney, the maker of the controversial 9/11 documentary Missing Links, along with John Martinson, who also deserves credit. And Mike, you know, I'm still steamed about this. Tens of millions of copies of this Islamophobic DVD called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West, that have been distributed through newspapers, including, I believe, the New York Times actually distributed 145,000 copies of this DVD in national editions of the paper in 11 markets, and among them, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're getting anti-Muslim hate propaganda being spread by the New York Times in tens of millions of copies. And then, when you, with your, I think, dubious statements about Jews, go out and try to, you know, talk about some of these things that do need to be talked about, like the 9/11 attacks and who was behind them, you get punched out by the likes of Alan Ruff. I don't think that's fair, so that's why I'm having you on. Mike, one way of thinking about this is in terms of the market dominant minority theory. Mark Twain wrote a very interesting essay about the Jewish culture, in which he said that the reason for anti-Jewish prejudice in the West was mainly that Jews were too successful, that whenever Jews entered the profession, they drove the goyim out simply by being better at that profession. And in many parts of the world, we do have examples of market-dominant minorities. In Indonesia and other Asian countries, the Chinese immigrants make up a market-dominant minority that kind of takes over the economy. If that's the case, then, you know, what does that mean, that we should be angry with this particular group? Or, you know, what's the solution to a market-dominant minority problem?
Well, the difference between the Chinese running that and being hardworking slaves for the corporations of these peoples is equivalent to, you know, the standard agriculture and other low-paying jobs that are done by immigrant Mexicans here. That certainly isn't a field of dominance or political dominance or financial dominance by any means.
In Indonesia, the Chinese immigrants, with their capital networks, have really taken over the business scene. There's a huge, you know, economic stratification. Actually, it's much bigger than between Jews and non-Jews in the U.S. The Chinese immigrants are way, way ahead of the native Indonesians in Indonesia. And this has created riots and problems, pogroms.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you could point incidences like this out for quite a bunch of different obscure facts. But, you know, it's, I guess the issue I have is, you know, I live here in the United States, and my tax money and the television that I don't watch isn't controlled by Indonesian and Chinese. The kosher tax I pay on the food, as someone that did grow up Christian, certainly isn't going to Indonesian and Chinese. My children's futures, which if I wanted to put them in a school system and learn about fraudulent history, has nothing to do with the indigent Indonesian. It's in Chinese.
Well, I was making a comparison in terms of this idea of the market dominant minority.
Yeah.
And Jews have been market dominant minorities in various sectors in various countries. After the fall of the Soviet Union, many of the billionaires were Jewish, and they had, you know, created or you know, played key roles in this Russian-Israeli mafia. That's a big problem worldwide. This is just these are just simple demographic facts about ethnic groups. But, you know, I think that, you know, recognizing that the situation where, you know, you have Jews overrepresented in certain sectors in the U.S., such as journalism and the financial sector, should be talked about in a more calm and dispassionate way. And, you know, when we talk about what, you know, so what do we want done about this? You know, I think, I mean, who cares what ethnic group is, you know has more people
Kevin,
in that sector?
Kevin,
unless they're doing something like you know, attacking Palestinians, in which case that is a Zion problem with Zionism, not with with Judaism or Jewish ethnicity.
Well, yeah, there's been far worse crimes than even the Palestinian plight. You brought up a key topic there, the Soviet Union or Russia, for that matter. You know, the Bolshevik Revolution consisted of, 4,000 Jews that left New York and wrote themselves out a $20 million paycheck once they hijacked this country with their Federal Reserve.
I don't think it was quite that simple.
Huh?
I don't think it was quite that simple.
Well, I mean, these are the facts. You can read a book by Andrei Dyki, who was a Russian that immigrated out of there after the Bolsheviks took over there. And when they got into Russia, I mean, a lot of them changed their names to Russian-sounding names so that the general public there wouldn't understand that the coup d'etat that was being done by the Bolsheviks was, like I said, it was a predominantly Jewish revolution. And as everybody knows, the gulags and everything that killed, 20 to 30 million Russians, Andrei Dyki shows and lists every single person in the ranking government there. The percentage came out to 92 to 93% Jewish, and when they did take over that government, they created laws, aka hate laws, against anti-Semitism. But further than that, they created a law that said if you identified that someone was a Jew in government in Russia at that time, that was an executable offense. So if you pointed out the fact that Trotsky or Lenin were a Jew, Trotsky being from Brooklyn, that was an executable offense.
Right, but see, part of the, you know, this is the same thing as the hate speech laws, where the reason for those laws was presumably because there were a lot of these pogroms where non-Jewish people would riot and perpetrate violence against Jewish communities.
You're absolutely right, and I totally don't support hate laws. You know, if people want to hate pedophiles and crackheads and corporations, and they want to hate George Bush. They can hate, you know, this is a country where freedom is freedom, no matter unbridled freedom. Now, it's the same things, we made a video called The Jewish Gun Grabbers, and all the laws, within the last 20 to 30 years have been predominantly by Jewish politicians.
Well, wait a minute, I just interviewed a guy, Aaron is his name, from, Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership.
He's
from Milwaukee, and, you know, are you blaming, you know, him, even though he's in the front lines of protecting Second Amendment rights just because of his ethnicity?
Well, no, I would basically write that off as a controlled dissent thing there, but at the same time,
no, he's totally sincere. I mean, he's not faking it.
Well, here's my thing: is the fact is that from Schumer to Herb Kohler, which is here in Wisconsin, have been the predominantly people that have restricted the owning of firearms. Now, you know, the Founding Fathers set this country up. They said the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. They didn't say anything about safety locks, school zones, none of this. They said the rights to bear arms should not be infringed. These same people that created the laws to start restricting guns as best as they could are the same people that are trying to restrict laws of freedom of speech. They don't want to be identified, and they don't want you to have the rights identified. And this is why the question, I'm not going to get into the subject because it's a touchy subject, but, you know, in most of Europe, it is illegal to question the Holocaust. Now, that right there should spark enough in people to say, well, why would you need to have a law if what was said was true? Why would you need to have a law? You shouldn't. So this is, you know, this is, in this great country of ours, I would be ashamed to see, regardless, if people don't, you know, it's like Voltaire said, I might disagree with you, but I'll fight to the death to support what you want to speak, or, you know, something along that line.
Right. Well, that quote, which is probably apocryphal, I don't think they ever found it in his papers, was, I may disagree with what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it, or maybe it was
than
disagree. But yeah, that's how I feel. That's, you know, that's why I'm inviting you on, is when, you know, this creep Alan Ruff punches you out for speaking your mind. To me, that's unacceptable. And likewise, I think it's unacceptable to jail people because they question any Holocaust. I mean, the estimates for the number of African Americans killed in the slave trade Holocaust ranges from, you know, from close to 10 million up to 100 million. And anybody who says it's only 10 million is they're not going to get locked up. So that should be true. Nobody should be locked up for, you know, questioning things like that. That's ridiculous.
Exactly.
You know, we've reached the end of the show, Mike. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, and like I said, it's 911missinglinks.com and soulthings.org. Appreciate you having me on, Kevin.
Hey, no problem, Mike. Keep on speaking your mind. Hopefully, I'd like to see you temper some of those opinions, but hey, you know, it's a free country. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, it used to be a free country anyway. We'll see how long we can still get away with talking like this. This is Kevin Barrett on Dynamic Duo, signing off till Monday, so until then, stick around. Oh, by the way, go to my website, barrettforcongress.us, to find my radio schedule. Got some great shows coming up. Take care.